History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that really ought to be told. They should definitely not go untold. And the solution is for us to take a little time, ask a few questions, and listen to what comes back our way from some of our more experienced neighbors. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that way, boy, we come out ahead. We learn a lot. We're educated. We're entertained. And so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today I'm in Madera, California, with 96-year-old Leroy Tucker, who served both in the European and Pacific theaters of World War II. You don't have to wonder what branch of service it was, because if you drive up to his home, you see that U.S. Army flag flying right underneath the Stars and Stripes. Mr. Tucker, great to be with you today. And I want to hear, though, before you ever heard of Madera, California, let's hear about your childhood. Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Well, as much as I can remember, I was born in Blue Jacket, Oklahoma, up in the northeastern corner. And it was rail town where my dad was a blacksmith. They baled hay there and put it on the train and shipped it back to the racehorse tracks back in Pennsylvania, I think it was. So we lived there. I was 5 years old when we left Oklahoma, moved to New Mexico. And my dad homesteaded out there. Times were pretty rough at that time. And I think we ended up moving to Madera, California in 1938.
I understand there's a photo around here somewhere. You and your brother have a wagon that your goats are pulling you on?
My dad, he was always doing something for the kids, you know. And so he got busy and built this little wagon. And he'd take a walnut tree down on along the creek beds and about the size of the wheels would be. He sawed the wheels out of it and put an iron band around them like a wagon wheel. He built this wagon and went and bought us two billy goats. And as they grew up, we fed them as little ones. And he made harness out of the old horse harnesses and everything and put them on these goats. And we learned them to drive just like a team of mules. And on the sale day, when we moved to New Mexico, some guy bid on them, and I think they brought $5. The wagon, the goats, and all.
And that hits on something. So, you know, when you had that wagon and the goats, you were riding in style.
Yeah.
But you just said the sale day, so the Great Depression hits, and your family has to find any money you can, and you're selling everything you have to move out here, huh?
That's right. I think he had Hereford cattle out there, I don't know how many, mules too, and I think a good Hereford cow would bring $6 or something like that.
Is that something that made an impression on you? Was that kind of scary
Of course, I was just a kid, you know, everything. We took in everything, and when we moved to New Mexico, we were probably 30 miles from any town. The post office was close by where they had a big coal mining industry there at one time, and that's where they had the country post office where we'd get our mail and stuff in. And my dad had a car and a Model T Ford truck, and he hauled rocks from this old mining town where they'd built stuff out of these big rocks, and they'd haul him and my older brothers would haul rock out there to, I call it the middle of the desert. Well, it was only 15 miles north of where they set off the first atomic bomb.
How about that?
And we lived there. After we moved there is when they set off that bomb, and my relatives still lived there on the ranch that they had then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Their dad, he was an old man and couldn't hardly walk, I guess, sleeping in bed. And when that bomb went off in the valley there, he said he couldn't see anyway, but he said he could read the calendar on the wall in his room. That's how bright it was.
Wow.
And some way or another, they missed all the radiation, I guess, because it went up over them, and they moved most all everybody and anything they could move. They'd get it out of there, you know, but they missed a lot of stuff. Some of their animals even got radiation, and one side of the Hereford red cow would turn kind of a gray color. They come out from the little place in, well, it was back east somewhere where they take that radiation stuff, you know. They come and got some of their animals, young stock, took it back there and put it on pasture, and then every so often they'd test the meat for radiation and stuff. But
how about that?
That's but I can remember that much.
And so you're talking about that, I think they call it the Trinity site.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In New Mexico. Right. And that's where you had been living for these years. So if you had stayed there, you would have felt the ground shaking a little bit.
We'd probably had to move out. I'm sure they did. But
But you moved 1938, came here to California.
Right. And we landed here in Madeira. And my dad bought the Y out here where the roads go out of Madeira. Mm-hmm. 145.
You were going to Madeira High School?
Yeah. 3 years I did, and then last year I didn't graduate. Riding a bus to high school, it had the old curtains on there for windows on Avenue 12 down here where Highway comes 99 through there. The bus turned off there and went back around to Madeira. Well, one foggy morning, he pulled up to this bus to the railroad track there. A little Mexican guy was sitting in the middle of the bus. He was taking a class in French. He opened the door of the bus to see if any trains were coming or in the fog, and he was supposed to put somebody out to listen on the track, you know. But he just opened the door and didn't see no light or anything, so he started to close the door, and the little guy hollered at him, "There's a train coming." And it was 8 o'clock. Mail train coming through, and it was coming fast, and it was only less than a quarter of a mile from us. Bus driver had already pulled up the front end of that old bus on the tracks, and he puts that thing in reverse, and if he'd went forward, it probably hit the bus just about dead center. Well, he just jammed it in reverse, and that old engine just jumped like that backwards. That train only missed us just a few feet there. It was off the track.
Ooh.
So that was, this little guy was a hero there for a long time. It saved us all.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did, really.
We wouldn't have any of this World War II stuff to talk about or anything else in 96 years if he didn't care of you there.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm doing the math right, it would have been right after your 17th birthday when December 7th, 1941 rolled around.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that day and how you found out what happened?
Yeah, my brother-in-law was in where they bombed the Pearl Harbor. He was in the Navy, and he went through all that.
But on December 7th, you're here in Madeira, and you know this is one of your sister's husbands?
Yeah.
Is there. So that must have been a big deal in your family when you hear Pearl Harbor's been bombed.
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah.
How shocking was that news? Can you help us understand maybe what it would have been like then?
Oh, we'd heard stories, you know, building up to the war, because over New Mexico there where we lived in, there was a rail that come in to pick up the coal that they mined there. Yeah. And all that coal, they made it into little bricks like this, like pressed hard, real hard. And they shipped it all to Pennsylvania to the steel mills because it burned hotter and they could make the steel better out of it. Well, in the meantime, before the war started and the mines started closing down, Japan come over and bought up all the railroad tracks and shipped them to Japan to building up for this World War II. So that's, I'd hear stories like that, you know, told around and listened to them.
And as far as catching the news of Pearl Harbor, is that something y'all would have heard on the radio? Or?
Yeah, we had a little radio listened to, an old one, I should say.
Was there any thought for you that, hey, my brothers and I might be doing something with this?
Well, we were pretty young then, so didn't think too much about it, but we'd listen to the older folks talk about it all the time and stuff like that.
So when did it become real for you that this was something you were going to be a part of?
Oh, we'd listen to it every day, every night. The radio had this news was ours. We'd sit and listen with my aunt and uncle and them.
Eventually, though, Uncle Sam says, I want you, I need you.
Yeah, it's after Battle of the Bulge was going on over there, and they needed more recruits, and that's when they called and said that we can't get any more deferment for milking.
Well, tell me about that. So you didn't have to go initially when you turned 18.
No.
They said, we need milk. We need you milking those cows.
Yeah, that's right. That's why they gave me the deferment. They needed the cream more than anything else, they said, instead of the milk for some reason. I don't know why.
And what about for you? So when they say, hey, no more deferments, you're going to have to serve.
I didn't bother me too much. I was curious of what all was coming in front of us. They had a little bunch of us that lived in the neighborhood, older guys and us younger guys and everything. We'd meet at the Ripperton School over close by there, and they had wooden guns, rifles that somebody had made, and they'd give us one to put over our shoulder, and we'd have a man come there, and he'd go out there and march us all around the school grounds and teach us like home guard. When we got to San Francisco, it was inducted into the Army. They said, you got to take the train now down to Monterey. We got down there, and we'd missed the train. We thought we was in trouble then, because they said everything is supposed to be all fixed for you and everything else, so don't be late getting on that train, or you'll be in bad trouble. But we missed the train, and we didn't know what to do. We were just kids then, practically, you know.
Yeah.
So with the USO, I think I'm saying it right, they had a place just down the street from us there, and the man there on the thing told us, said, I'll get you guys a place to stay tonight. Next morning, make sure you get on that train to go down there. And sure enough, we all got up and hit that train. There's quite a few more guys coming that we didn't even know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we all got on the train, went to Fort Ord down there to get our clothes and duffel bag and everything we had, and get on a truck and go on down to the big Miller Bear base by Paso Robles over there. Yeah, when we first got down there, it was about 110 in the shade, I think, out there. This big parade ground stretched a mile there, this blacktop, you know, where the infantry guys would all march out there all the time. Their trucks pulled out there to unload us, and when the truck in front of us left, the guy said, you guys are one lucky bunch. And we wouldn't know why. And he said, well, that last truck pulled out of here, you'd went to the infantry. Today you're going into the field artillery. So we felt pretty good about that. And then they put us on the 155 to start training on and everything.
This at Camp Roberts?
Yeah.
The 155 is a far cry from the wooden rifles out of Ripperton.
Oh, yeah, it was a big old howitzer, you know.
Yeah.
You had to load it, you know, from a cradle. You'd put on the back of it there and put your projectile on the cradle. Then one guy'd get on each side with a ramrod and ram the shell inside, and then put a powder bag in there and learn how to close it up and fire it. Then as it jumped around, you'd have to get back on your sights and everything. Just training like that. Then we had a tractor. They called it an M5.
Mm-hmm.
And it had seats for our crew to all sit on and everything. And every time we'd go out on maneuvers, when we'd be going down one of those old dusty dirt roads over there, you couldn't even see the guy in front of you. Know That's how bad it was. I remember one time they called us. We was coming in to line up the guns and everything, and the lieutenant or whoever, captain or whatever he was out there waiting on us. When we all pulled in there, them guys driving them M5 tractors, they just wheeled them in there real fast, and so much dust that you couldn't even tell one from another, you know. And the captain, he was sitting over there just like he's pulling his hair out. So it was a lot of fun. We had guys from all over the United States, I think, in our outfit.
Was that eye-opening?
Yeah, I was, really. See, the 86th Division that we're going to here, they were in Louisiana at the time I was taking my basic. They were on maneuvers down there kind of in the wintertime. They said when they got to talk to them when they moved over by Santa Clara, in that area there was a base there. They didn't like it over there because they said the wind blew every day. But they finally moved up to San Luis Obispo out of there.
And that's where...
That's where they took us guys that had just taken our basic. They'd come and take so many guys out that finished their basic training, and they'd send us down there as replacements, building up the 86th Division to go to the islands.
Yeah, you're thinking you're training to go fight in the Pacific.
Yeah, right.
But while you're there at Camp Roberts, your basic training, I understand there was somebody in the barracks next to you whose name we might recognize.
Red Skelton. Yeah, he was taking his basic just like the rest of them. He'd come to the kitchen and peel potatoes just like all the rest of us had to. Till he had his basic training, then they moved him on out to the recreation where they'd send him overseas to entertain troops and stuff like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
He was so good at it.
And you guys all knew who he was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, every evening, you know, after meals, we didn't have nothing else to do, only sit around on the steps of the buildings or something, visit and stuff like that. Why, he joined everybody in there, just like he was one of them, and was.
And did I hear he even came to one of your guys' reunions and did some entertainment for you?
After 30 years, we had our first reunion. He was having a big show in Reno, and Jim Dowd lived in Sparks, Nevada then, so he was one of the guys putting on the reunion. After 30 years, we kind of had to get used to everybody again.
Sure.
You know, after that many years, everybody looked different or something. An old Red Skelton was in the show. Our table was probably, they had a stair step. You'd have a row of tables up here with a little fence in between them, and it'd drop down, and there'd be another row of tables down here. Well, our table was here, and then it dropped down. There was a table there, and they had some of our officers sitting down there with Red Skelton on that table. And we were sitting right up there on the fence, so we could talk with them and everything right there. And Red Skelton was sitting there drinking a Heineken beer. One of the officers' wives, she said, Mr. Skelton said, when you get through that bottle, would you sign it and could I have it for a souvenir? And he said, oh, no, ma'am. Said, it'd cost me $10,000 if I did that. So that's their restrictions on why I can't do that. She said, well, what do they do with the bottles then? And he said, they make me sign them, and they put them in the front window out there, and knock, and somebody comes in and bids so much to get them. And he says to the lady, she says, see that big elephant that come out on the stage? It was a real elephant, but she said, yeah. Well, see that big old black spot on the side of him there? And she said, well, yeah, it looks like a black spot. He said, that's where they put the key in him to wind him up. But he had all his, you know, he was an artist on clown pictures.
Uh-huh.
He had a stack of them that thick there, and he'd just show them to people, and somebody could take them and whatnot like that. I think he did sign a couple of postcards for my two kids. They were just little kids. And I asked if he would do it, and he said, sure, give them here. Boy, he just put his name on them, and they're still around here somewhere.
So you get done with that training, and like you said, you didn't end up in the infantry, which you're thankful for now. You end up in field artillery.
Yeah.
You think you're getting ready to go to the Pacific, and there's going to be some battles to fight in there. Maybe you would have ended up on Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys even did some amphibious training?
Oh, yeah. We took from San Luis Obispo, where we were there at our base, we took those old ducks.
Mm-hmm.
You know what a duck is like.
Yeah.
It's to float on the water.
Not like the ones you got out back here.
No. We went clear to San Diego riding those things at Camp Pendleton. Got on a landing ship out there like we'd land on if we went overseas. We took the old 105 and put it up on deck and tied it down with some chains or ropes or whatever they had there to do it with, and fired a few blank shells at the beaches over there. Then put it back in that thing and get in it and ride it to the beach and come out of the water on it and unload the gun out of it there and fire a few rounds at something out there and then clean the gun good. And they'd say you could have the weekend off, so we all did and got out on the highway like this, come back to Fresno and Madeira here for a weekend.
Hitchhike your way home, and in uniform, people would always pick you up, I guess, right?
Oh, well, I don't think we was out there 5 minutes till here come a car and stopped there. There's two guys in it, two sailors, me and a guy from Visalia Wiley. He was on my gun crew. He was a sight man, and I was a number one gunner on the opposite wheel. Anyway, we thumbed the right. We had been there, I don't think, 5 minutes. These guys pulled up and stopped. Where are you going? Oh, we're going up to Madera, Fresno. Well, get in, we're going to Fresno.
Well, and you said something when you mentioned the sailors. That reminds me. I hear there was a pretty good reason why you didn't want to be a sailor. Why you chose the Army instead of the Navy?
No, I don't know. I just didn't. I couldn't swim. I'd never been learned to swim or anything like that.
Of course, he would still have to get on a ship to head overseas and serve in Europe and in the Pacific. We'll hear more of that when we come back. 96-year-old Leroy Tucker of Madera, California, our guest today. Find photos and a short video with him at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.